Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network.
In the future, none of you are heroes.
You're legends.
Get driven. Stay driven.
Welcome to another episode of the Heart Grapevine. My name is Matt Joslin. I am here once again with the first son of the legendary Stu Hart, the one and only Smith Hart. Smith, how you doing tonight? I know it's been a rough week for you. How you feeling tonight?
Hey, everybody. Yeah, I'm feeling better, but I've been feeling pretty rough all week and more maybe for the last 10 days. And about an hour ago, I just noticed a bit of relief in walking. My hip was just killing me, so I am seeing my cancer specialist, Dr. Hang, tomorrow, and probably I'm going for my first chemotherapy for my hip on Friday. I'm there all day at the Baker Cancer Center at the Foothills Hospital. I'm hoping for the best. I don't know. It's all, you know, I thought I was improving, and then it started to kind of reverse itself. I mean, so it's everybody's, you know, you got their, everybody's kind of alarmed now, and we'll find out, I guess, what's going on. But I'll just keep my fingers crossed.
Well, we're going to jump right into a pretty good interview. I'm sorry to hear that you're not feeling too well lately, and hopefully the chemo starts treating you really well. We're going to jump right into our interview here today. We've got a legend of legends waiting on the line here for us. One of the former greats of Stampede Wrestling during its heyday, when it was actually in its prime, one of the greatest tag team competitors of all time. I'd like to welcome the Butcher, Paul Vachon. Mr. Vachon, are you with us? Mr. Vachon? Hello? Is Paul Vachon on the line with us?
I don't know what happened there. He was on the line there before we hit the broadcast.
I still am. Hello.
Oh,
hello.
There you are. Hey, Paul.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great.
Welcome to the show, Mr. Bashan.
Listen, I'm having trouble hearing you, really. And I guess you're having trouble hearing me.
I can hear you, Paul. Smith Hart
yeah,
hears
okay.
you loud and clear.
Yeah, so what do the boys want to talk about?
Well, I'd like to, for starters, just to say, you know, how much the Vachons meant to Calgary way back in, like, I think 1957. Maurice was working for my dad. I'm not sure if you were already there or you came maybe shortly thereafter, but we had some of the greatest tag teams ever in that time, you know, when we had what was called Big Time Wrestling Saturday night on Channel 2 here. We had teams like the Torres brothers, the Kalmakoff brothers, the Miller brothers, the Mills, Alan, Tiny Mills were still around then, the Scott brothers.
Yeah, George and Sandy Scott. I remember them very well. I remember all those guys that you're
brothers,
talking about. Yeah.
Some of the best tag teams ever.
Yeah, I think there's, that's really true. And my brother, Mad Dog, and I, both of us got inducted together because of the tag teams that we did. And, you know, if truth be known, my brother and I mean, I was in the business for over 30 years, and Mad Dog was in it for 35, 40 years, and we had only been together in all those years, maybe 6 or 7 years out of those. But when we were together, we did very well. And I must say that when Mad Dog was by himself, he was also individual world champion in the AWA. And I had traveled all over the world and wrestled in 33 different countries. And we both of us were very successful, but I don't think I ever enjoyed the wrestling business as much as I did when my big brother was with me. As a matter of fact, he was 8 years older than I. I always thought I was a pretty tough guy, but believe me, Mad Dog was three times as tough as I was. And I didn't really have to be all that good when I was with him. I just had to be there. And
my dad admired your brother. Your brother, Mad Dog, was British Empire amateur champion, was he not?
Yes, he was. He won a gold medal in Auckland, New Zealand in 1950. And he also, he was only 20 years old. And 2 years before, he had represented Canada in the 1948 Olympics in London. And he came in fourth. He was a teenager, believe it or not.
That's pretty...
I mean, in wrestling, there are Olympic athletes that are 13, 14. They're mostly runners and gymnasts, but wrestlers never. The wrestlers need the 10, 15 years experience to compete on the worldwide circuit. But Mad Dog was only a teenager. And as we said, 2 years later, he won a gold medal for Canada in the British Empire Games in Auckland, New Zealand. I've written a couple of books, and I've got him on a picture of him standing on the podium when they gave him his gold medal in Auckland, New Zealand. I was always very proud of my brother, not only for his amateur wrestling, but for who he was, you know. I mean, Smitty, you'll know what I'm talking about. I have 7 brothers and 5 sisters, and I come from a very, very big family, and there's still... after all these years, there's still 8 of us left. So I consider myself pretty lucky after all the trouble I've had with my health. But I mean, what the heck, I'm still around, so I'm very happy about that.
Yeah, you guys had good genetics. Obviously, you had a lot of, you know, Luna Vachon and Vivian Vachon, and you have more people in your family than the Bélergeons.
Well, that's true, but they were quite a legend too.
Yeah. Well, my dad admired both you and Paul, and you know, you did good business for us in Calgary. I was just starting to watch wrestling then on TV. I didn't even go to the matches. We were, you know, we could stay awake till midnight and watch the show on Big Time Wrestling, as they called it. I think Sam Menneker was our commentator then. We could watch it. At halftime, I'd fall asleep waiting. It's about 10 o'clock, I'd fall asleep and, you know, I wouldn't miss it, but... it was only on odd days I'd get to, you know, some of us would get to go on a good Friday afternoon and see the midgets or the bear. And, you know, we might see some of the other wrestlers that were in at the time, you know, the Kangaroos or you or, you know, the Millers or the Scots or whatever. But good old days.
Yeah, indeed. Well, listen, I really am looking forward to coming to Alberta in about a month and a half, I guess.
That'll be great. I'd love to see you.
Yeah, well, we'll have to keep in touch, Speedy, because I'd like to, you know, relive a few of the moments. I mean, I've seen you through the years and everything, but it would be nice to be in Alberta where the whole thing started, you know. I mean, and Alberta will always have a nice place in my heart, as much as well as the Hart family. I mean, I consider myself a friend of the family, and I remember Mrs. Hart and all you guys. I like to tell this story. When I was up there in 59 was the year my Mad Dog and I was out there, and on Saturday we'd go up to the foothills there to the Athletic Club where you guys were, and I saw Stu put all you boys in the bathtub in a great big water tub, and he was hosing you guys down and giving you a bath, and I said, now that's the way to go.
Exactly. We don't make tubs like that anymore, do they?
No, sir. And they don't make people like Stu either anymore.
Well, I always enjoyed going to... I like Montreal. I think it's a great city, and, you know, it's all the better to see you guys there. Yeah. And I'd like to meet the rest of your family that you're talking about. I understand you got some boys living in Alberta working on the oil patch.
Yes, there's three of them, and of course, my first wife was from Red Deer, you know.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and all three of those boys are from that marriage, but she's now dead. She died of cancer, too.
Oh, that's too bad. Did you know that Jerry Graham, Dr. Jerry Graham, married a girl, Maureen Liggett, from Calgary? She's a beautiful woman, and he got a nice boy or two from her. It's too bad, Jerry. He could still be alive. He could be a manager. He was a good talker, but he drank himself to death.
Oh, yeah. I really don't want to talk about that, but I had trouble with that, too. But thank God I haven't had a drink now for 32 years.
I didn't know that.
Well, I was in bad shape. I was an alcoholic, too. And all the bumps, of course, they have the, it wears your body out, you know.
Oh, I can see where people maybe want to have a nip or have some painkillers to ease the bumps and the pain from injuries over the years. It just adds up, and as long as you don't realize it, but it's all of a sudden it catches up with you.
Well, this is not.
Sorry, I didn't interrupt here, Mr. Vachon. Smith mentioned Montreal there. You grew up in Montreal, and I was just going to ask a quick question there. Now, you and your brother actually were involved in running a territory in Montreal, correct?
Running what?
A territory?
Oh, hell yeah. Sure, we went there and started our own company. It was called Grand Prix Wrestling, and before it only lasted like about 5 years, but before it was all done, we had a network show on CTV. It went from all the way from Newfoundland to eastern British Columbia. And we were in pretty well all the provinces, and we broke all sorts of records everywhere, and we were very happy. But after a while, the partners, we had Edward Capancier as a partner, and we had a couple of the other boys, and they gave us so much trouble once we started. Nobody wanted to take care of it, and when we first started, and then they gave me the job. I said, "What the hell? I'll take it easy on the wrestling, and Mad Dog can get another partner for a while, and I'll take care of it." And we became one of the most successful promotions all across Canada. But after 5 years, it got to me, and I told Mad Dog, I says, "I want to sell my share." He says, "If you're not staying, neither am I." So we both sold our shares. And I told them, I said, "You guys keep fighting like this, in a year you'll be out of business." And I don't feel proud of myself, but that's what happened. After a year, they went out of business.
Paul was Eddie Quinn. When did Ed Quinn get out of there? He was kind of a slimy promoter for a while in Montreal.
Yeah. He was, and he drank himself to death. He died. He was already dead when we started, and we started in Montreal in 70.
He used to always stiff some midgets and stuff. You know, he'd send them to New York and different places, but he'd never give them the right pay. He'd keep half, you know, what they got.
He used to be a gopher in Boston, and Paul Bowser in those days was the promoter. And he said to him one day, just he wanted to get rid of him, I guess. He says, "I'm going to send you to Montreal, and you see what you can do over there." And he took over the business. He partnered up with Yvon Robert, who was the big world champion at the time.
Yeah.
And they had a good run. But the word you used, slimy, was, I don't want to talk ill about dead people, but He was sort of like that, and he never wanted to give local guys a break, because his partner was Yvon Robert, and that was enough for him, and he didn't want nobody to steal the limelight from his champion, you know. And in any case, we're just, this is all his wrestling history, and it's also, it becomes personal because my brother and I were so part of it and everything. And, you know, when we came to Calgary in 1959, it's because George Scott, who was the booker at one time that worked with your dad, he knew Mad Dog, and he asked him. And Mad Dog says, "I'll talk to my brother, because I was already thinking about quitting the business then, and I was only like 20 years old, and because we couldn't get a break there." So we came to Calgary, and everything clicked real good, and after that, we never looked back. And,
No.
Mad
Dog, he brought Andre the Giant in from Europe, didn't he, from France?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I did. Yes, I did. Frank Valois knew him personally, and Frank Valois was working for us, and he said, "Listen, let's give him a try." So I remember sending him a ticket for two seats on tourists. $600 was the cost of it, And after 3-4 years of working, I was working like an idiot promoting in Montreal. And finally, I go pick up some tickets at a travel agency, and I see on the wall there's a picture, there's a advertisement that says, "Go to Paris for a week, $400. I told my wife, I says, "Load up the girls." That was Luna at the time and my other girl. I says, "Load up the girls. We're going to Paris for a week." So wow. We took off and went to Paris. And the day I got there, it had been a long traveling day, so we went to bed early. But about 7 o'clock in the morning, there's a knock on the door. And I said, "Who the hell's knocking on our door in Paris? We don't know anybody here." And I opened the door, and it's Andre the Giant. I said, "What the hell are you doing here? God damn it, I just left you in Montreal." He says, "Well, you're here, aren't you?" He says, "I'm here, too, and I'm going to show you around." So he stuck with us for a week, because it was kind of a slow week back in Montreal. So, and in that week, I saw more nightclubs and met more showgirls and women that you could ever think of. And Andre the Giant was a very good friend of mine. I was also the first guy. There was a big fuss made about Hulk Hogan being the first to body slam him. And he really wasn't, because I body slammed him first. And this is how it happened. After a while, when I was promoting in Montreal, I got a call from the promoter in Chicago. He says, "Look," he says, "I hear you got a giant over there. We want to use him." I said, "Well, I'm sorry, but he's too expensive. We can't let you have him." He says, "Well, how much is it?" I said, "Well, I at that time this was big money. I says, "I want $10,000 for 1 week for him." In those days, that was unheard of, you understand?
That's right, absolutely.
And I said, "I want $2,000 for the guy that's going to wrestle him." And he said, "Well, no, we can't pay that much." And I said, "Well, sorry, but we can use him over here." So finally he came across. He says, "Okay, I'll do it." He says, who's gonna come with him?" I said, "I am." So I got the payoff. But in any case, when I got there, listen to this, Smitty. When I get there, it's a handicap match. It's Larry Hanning and I against Andre the Giant. And the promoter first asked me, he said, "What the hell's his name anyway?" I said, "Well, his name is Jean Ferré." And he says, "Jean Ferré, how do you say that in English?" Well, I said, "Well, we call him the Giant Ferry." He says, "What the hell are you talking about?" He says, "We can't call him the Giant Ferry. He's 7'4", for God's sakes, and weighs 400 pounds. And I said, "Well," he says, "what's his real name?" I said, "His name is Andre Rusimov." He says, "Well, we'll call him Andre the Giant." And that's how he got the name. So anyway, we got in the ring. And Larry Hanning is my partner. He's never seen this guy. And he sees him. We're in the ring first, and he sees the guy coming down the aisle. He's like 3 feet taller than everybody else. And with one big giant steps, he steps into the ring. And Larry Hanning can't hold back. He says, "What the hell are we going to do with that guy?" He says. I says, I bet you I can body slam him." And he started laughing at me. And just in the heat of the moment, he said, "Okay, you're on for the bet." But without setting the stakes, you understand? So then we get into the middle of the ring, and we're getting instructions from the ref, from the referee for when he's talking to Larry Henning, I sneak over towards Andre the Giant, and I speak to him in French. I said, "I bet my partner I could body slam you." He said, "Oh," he said, "Okay, boss." That's all he said.
That's right. He always said, "Boss."
Yeah, he used to call me boss. Anyway, and the first thing I did was body slam him, and then I said, "My God, people can't be believing this." So, just to get even, he picked me up three times and body slammed me. Just about broke through the goddamn ring. Pardon my language. But in any case,
that's
a story.
And that's good of him. That was smart of him to do that because it makes
sense.
Yeah,
well, yeah. And then Maurice heard about it. He says, "Are you nuts?" He says, "You body slamming the giant." He says, he made him look, you know, small and everything. But
well, technically, nobody should have slammed him. If he didn't want to be slammed, he wouldn't be. But Hulk
no,
Hogan
no, absolutely
matter.
Not. And Hulk Hogan said the same thing. Of course, I knew that. I mean, with Andre the Giant, I mean, he was in there just to make the thing go, you know. I mean, yeah. I've got all kinds of memories about Andre the Giant, but
I remember one time he was trying to maul Chuck Wepner in a WWE ring or something, and they had Gorilla Monsoon there kind of just to maybe as backup, and they didn't need Gorilla. But Andre was going after Chuck. He would have killed poor old Chuck if he had got his hands on him.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he had quite a life. You know, he knew, he had been told as a young boy growing up that he would not live to be very old because of his the growing sickness. And that's why he lived every day like it was his last, you know.
Yeah. He had a girlfriend here, Babette Bardot. She was a cousin of Bridget Bardot. She had a 52-inch bust, and she was an exotic dancer, and she'd always have her entourage. And her, you know, she had a family, her daughter and son and her husband. They'd do a gymnastic thing, and she'd do dancing on the stage. And she'd always make sure she came Stampede Week, and she'd be in the float with us, with Andre. And one time, he's just sitting down to steak and lobster with her in the best hotel in the city, and he thought he had the week off, a nice few days off, because he knew that his visa would expire on a certain day, and my dad booked him for 2 weeks in Canada, Stampede Week, and then some time after. But we had a show, we had, 5 days in Montana, and if he went in across the border, his visa would expire before the Stampede Week show here. So he said he couldn't go, didn't want to go, and my dad didn't want to understand. He says, "Go get him and get him on the plane, get him to Montana." So here he is sitting down with this girl in a 52-inch bus, ready to, you know, to start the day off with a nice big, lunch. And I spoiled the fun. I said, "You got to go to this Montana." And he dragged his ass. He didn't want to go, and by the time he left the room, there was like 10 minutes to get to the airport in time, and I drive down the alley, down the Regis, going the wrong way, past the police station, the wrong way, and I ran every light all the way to the airport, and he's in the back of Stu's limo, just bouncing around, like swaying left and right, and I put the window up because he was cursing, and he didn't win. Anyway, he made the flight, but when I came back outside after I got him through customs, Brett was in the car, and there's a bunch of police surrounding the car, and they were going to arrest me. And when Brett had tried to defend me as best he could, when I came out, I said, "I'm really sorry. I did this for my dad. And, I explained who I was and this and that." And the old sergeant, who he didn't have a very good car. He was in an old shitbox. He was a desk sergeant, but he and another cop followed me all the way out there. He could never quite catch me. I had that car floored. But they kind of laughed it off at the end. But so sure enough, when he finishes Montana, he can't cross the border. So my dad had to call Vince McMahon Sr. and get him to wake people up in Washington, D.C. and do the paperwork and get Andre across the border back into Canada. It all worked out, but Andre never forgave me for that.
Yeah. Oh, well. Well, listen,
you know, one time my dad took him to Clearwater Beach, which we didn't have back when you guys were working in Calgary, but sometime after, I think in 1962 or something, my dad bought this resort out west of Calgary, and he invited Andre out. The Croatians were having a big picnic, and Andre spoke Yugoslavian, and they gave him a leg of lamb. They had a barbecue with a big leg of lamb, a big lamb on the spit. The leg of lamb looked like a chicken leg in his hands. And then they gave him a bottle of Gamza wine. That looked like a beer bottle. There was like a half a gallon of wine in there. And he didn't have any problem polishing that off. But I like to see Andre having a good time, you know, because I know he was always on the go. People exploited him, and, you know. But he was the only unique person. There's only one Andre the Giant. There's nobody ever since.
Absolutely.
You guys discovered him and brought him to Canada with Frank Balois.
When I first got him, he was 24. He was 7'4" and weighed 425 pounds. And when he died, he was 41. He was 7'6" and weighed 650 pounds, and that's what really killed him. He went to his father's funeral in Paris. By that time, he had a ranch in North Carolina. North Carolina. He went to his father's funeral, and that day, he was going to come back the next day on the plane to North Carolina. He went to bed in his room, and he never woke up. He died the same day that he buried his father.
That's too bad.
Well, of course, but, you know, I mean, nobody had a life like Andre the Giant, and then that's the way it should be. Yeah.
I remember one Stampede Week, Paul. One of the last ones that Andre was here when before he kind of you know, was lined up with Vince Jr. and the WWE, but Frank Balois was managing him, and he always brought his gear along. And I don't know how old Frank was; he had to be in his 60s anyway. But somebody called us from Tabor, Alberta, and said, what time are you arriving, or what time are you?" And my dad said, "Oh my goodness, I forgot to, you know, we got three shows today." They had split the midgets up and the girls up, and they had two shows running, but they actually had a third one running, so they had to get an extra ring. They used the ring that they used in the Stampede Parade, the smaller 16-foot ring, and they had, you know, Frank Balois was on the card with Jack Pesek, and Dave Rule was the booker. You know Dave. So
I know all those guys.
Yeah, and Jack had wrestled the Stomper a few weeks before, and the Stomper had pulled his calf muscle on. Like, he pulled went to hit Pesek's leg on the apron, you know, and he ended up knocking the calf muscle off the tendons, and it shot up the back of his leg, and he could hardly walk. But as an old trooper, my dad said, "I need you in Tabor today," and Jack said, "No problem." And then Balois said, "No problem." So Dave didn't want to have either one of them do the job for the other, so he said, "Can you go 15 minutes through?" They both said, "Sure, no problem." So it's a hot fucking, like, 104 degrees in there in mid-July, and the opening match is always a hard match, especially in a town that you don't go to often. So they waltzed around the whole time. Neither one took a bump the whole time. They never left their feet, never went out through the ropes or anything. But they got heat, believe it or not. In that hot building, after a while, finally, Pesek slapped Balois on the face, and the expression, you know, was so indignant. And then, you know, before long, he got Pesek in the corner, and he backhanded him. And the fans loved it. They got off on it. And that second match wasn't as good. You know, a couple of young guys that didn't. But these guys knew their craft. They knew how to, when to, how long they could drag it out, and then they had to pop something. You know, the fans would shit on them, and they did it well. They knew they didn't break a sweat, but they knew they had that psychology, and they knew what they knew the fans, and, you know. It's amazing how good they were, some of these old guys.
Well, go ahead.
Mr. Richard, I don't want to keep you too much longer. We have actually had you on the phone for quite some time. And, there is actually an Andre the Giant movie coming out. Have you had any information about this, or have you been told about this? Are you going to be advising on it at all? You've been very instrumental in, obviously, Andre's life, bringing him over here. Do you have any information about this movie that's coming out that just was announced today?
I've been working on it for 2 years, for God's sakes. Do I know about it? I was working on that earlier this week, and I'm going to do it some more and until it comes out. I've got they've been consulting with us. We've been working on it for 2 years. They came to the Cauliflower Alley Club to tape me, and they came all over the darn country, for God's sakes. And they even talked to Maurice before he died, Mad Dog, and he's going to be in there. It's a movie about the Mad Dog and the Butcher, his brother. And
wow.
and that's what it is. First of all, it's the documentary, and then a French and English movie. They're going to make it in two languages. I mean, both in French and in English. And after that, they're thinking about doing a series, and it's two Canadian companies, one from Quebec City and the other one from Montreal, that's doing that. And where did you hear about it?
It was announced on Variety magazine today, and Dave Meltzer reported it on his website, and it actually started hitting the old dirt sheet by about midday today that this was coming out. So,
yeah.
If they do a
yeah.
series, Paul, I'd love to partake in it. You know, just even if you needed any data from Andre's times in Calgary.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Believe me, I'm gonna remember who I always remember who my friends are, and listen, I'm glad they're talking about it in the press anyway, because so far I was the only one. Well, not really, because they had gone to Omaha to see Mad Dog before he died. This is 3-4 years ago. Mad Dog's only been dead like a couple of years now. Anyway, listen, fellas, I'm very happy to have been talking to you, and let's do it again. And I'm sorry, unless you have something special you want to ask me, I'm gonna go to bed now. I have to go see my doctor in the morning, and I don't want to go to bed too. I never did this when I was wrestling.
Paul, on you were you got into politics for a while, did you not?
Yes,
you
I did.
NDP. Yeah, that's you did a lot of things besides wrestle. You know, you lived a charmed life, and I'd love to talk to you again. I think maybe we could have another chat sometime, because we haven't really covered much. There's lots I'd like to ask you about the Rougeaus and the Leducs.
Yeah.
The Leducs kind of reminded me of the Vachons, with one guy bigger than.
That's why the opposition started them. One was about my size, the bald head and the beard, and the other one was a bit smaller. Paul was, and they named him Paul and Joe, and that was to imitate the Vachon brothers. But after a while, it worked out pretty good, because we had a pretty good war going between the two of them, the two families and everything. Yeah.
We could have a whole other episode on the radio, Paul, I'm sure. So I will say goodnight to you now, and it was a real pleasure to talk to you. I look forward to seeing you in maybe a month from now.
Okay.
I'm going down east soon anyway for my friend, the co-interviewer's wedding on June 10th, and then I'm coming right back here.
Oh, yeah.
And that'll be about time you're in Red Deer. So we'll definitely I'll leave you my number through Matt, and you can call me, and I've got your number, and we'll definitely have some fun when you're in Alberta.
That sounds good. Thank you very much.
Love you. Love you very much. Great guy.
Hey, I love you guys, too. Thank you very much for calling me. Bye.
My pleasure. Good night. Au revoir.
Well, you know, quite an interview there, Smith. You got a lot of
nice guy. Yeah, I love talking to these guys that I remember. There's not too many of them left, you know. There's so many of them that are gone by the wayside.
How many people possibly can be left from wrestling in your dad's territory in 1957? He's got to be one of the very few of anybody that was alive from that era. And, you could probably go up and down your dad's roster.
Well, I don't know if any of the Kangaroos, either Al Costello or Roy Heffernan, are still alive. I don't know. I was really surprised when I heard that Dick Hutton was only died about 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah,
world
Don
champion.
Archer passed away as well, too. So, yeah, that generation dying out pretty fast. And, the last ones there. We certainly didn't get as much into his politics. We didn't get into a lot of stuff about Mad Dog Vachon, who's obviously one of the most famous wrestlers in history, too. His brother.
Oh, yeah, they did a lot to Vachon. I remember Paul. I'm not sure if they're both doing it. I think they both did the Peanut, the O. Henry Bar commercials with John Viner or something. I remember the one line that must be the fudge. But I know they did other commercials, too. They were busy. They didn't just retire and fade away. They kept, they were pretty good athletic business people.
Well, there's definitely no denying that right up there with the Harts in terms of legendary Canadian families. You know, we didn't talk much about his sister Vivian or about
Luna,
beloved daughter Luna. But
well, maybe next time we'll talk about all of them. But especially, I'll get some feedback when I see him here in July.
Absolutely.
I'm looking forward to that.
Absolutely. So, ladies and gentlemen, we want to also let you know we're going to have a bonus show coming up this Friday. And we're going to have the president of the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame, a friend of yours. You know, can you tell us about Tony Villano, Smith?
Yes, I just talked to Tony a few days ago, and he really very, very rarely grants interviews, but he said that just because of my family and the, I've been generous to the Hall of Fame, which has now been relocated in Texas, but it didn't just go to Texas. It was bidders all over the United States for it, and it's a real boon to any town where it is. You know, Coopersfield has approached them, and different cities all around the eastern states, and probably as far away as Texas. It is in Texas now. Johnny Mantell is the guy that nominated my father for Hall of Fame status, and great guy. I just talked to Tony a few days ago, and I said I probably could, if he's available, if he would do it. And he said, I would do it for you, but very rarely do I do these things. I admire Tony a lot, and I think the respect is mutual, but I said in about a month I could probably feasibly do it. But then in the meantime, they're having the Hall of Fame inductions and their big celebration. You know, it's a year-round thing, but the Hall of Fame is the highlight of it. So I'm going to try and get Tony Johnny Mantell both on for a bonus show this Friday. I have to still speak to Tony because I kind of put him off till for about a month. But now that we can maybe help to, give some advance publicity to the cause and announce all the inductees and things like that and the new location. We'll try to do that on Friday. So we'll either speak to one or the former head of it, Tony Villano. And I know Tony's listening. He doesn't miss any of my podcasts. And also Johnny Mantell probably doesn't miss them either. So I'll look forward to talking to one or the other, hopefully both of them on Friday. If not, we'll talk to Tony at another date if he's not available this Friday.
Well, we got Tony Villano and Johnny Mantell on the line. And I'm going to ask you also, I'm sure we're going to ask Tony and Johnny when we have them on the show on Friday, but I'll ask you right now, Paul, or Smith, what would you say is the difference between, say, the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame, which is now in Wichita Falls, and the WWE Hall of Fame? What would you say is, like, what makes it special to you?
Well, to me, the Hall of Fame in Wichita, or the one that used to be in Amsterdam, New York, has tradition and history and legitimacy. It's an actual museum. Whatever is on the WWE is kind of like props and temporal stuff that is just for the TV. It's not. There's no building or emblems or artifacts on display. It's just a one time only per night. Every WrestleMania has this kind of a Hall of Fame induction. It's an honor. It's a huge honor to be inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame, obviously. But this is the real McCoy with old artifacts from old wrestlers, old belts, and old programs and old robes and boots and posters and newspapers. They got some really good archives there. All those newspapers going back to the 20s and all kinds of stuff there that you would never expect. And that you get to meet these old wrestlers in person. They're not they're all available to you pretty much in the WWE. It's hard to get the, they're all kind of warded up and guarded by security and stuff. And this is homespun, down to earth. Real good time.
One of the things that I always say the difference between it is, when you go to the WWE Hall of Fame, it's one man's arbitrary decision of who he thinks is going to make him money in that year in that town. And that's the only decision that matters. Whereas you have the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame, it's a board, it's a committee, it's a voting process, and it's a museum.
Yeah, exactly.
You and I were there last year. Johnny Walker, the Mr. Wrestling 2, was inducted, one of the greatest wrestlers of the Southern Territories, and he was walking through there, and he noticed all these ring jackets, Paul Orndorff, Kevin Von Erich, and Greg the Hammer Valentine. He's like, my wife made these. The original Olivia Walker, who designed many of the robes of the wrestlers back in the 1970s and 80s, and
yeah,
donated there. It's a very special, it's a very hallowed place, and it's something that any wrestling fan, any true wrestling fan, owes it to themselves to actually go through that. And I think you and I, we've both been very blessed to be part of many of the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame celebrations, and you actually were able to induct the Junkyard Dog there a few years ago, too, I remember.
That's right, yeah.
So we'll have the show on Friday. We'll come, it's a special bonus show. We'll post the details, and then next Tuesday we're going to have former WWE broadcaster and one of your best friends in the wrestling business, the great Hugo Savinovich, on the line. So
Hugo originally was, I think, from Ecuador, and he I met him in Puerto Rico in 78, and then later I think it was maybe not even a year later, I was best man at his wedding when he married Wendy Richter, one of the top girls of all time. And you'll remember her from Rock and Wrestling, and also she was a champion for Moolah on the WWE back when Vince was just starting to blow his load with the new concept after his father died.
Well, we're going to try and do that show for 8 p.m. on Friday. We're going to set down all the details. We're going to post them on Facebook. So keep posted to the Facebook of Mr. Smith Hart. Or if you want to follow him on Twitter, it's SmithHart1. And also, please check out our sponsors, ProWrestlingTees.com. We're here live on the Totally Driven Entertainment Network. I'd like to thank our producer, Mike, who has a podcast during the days I believe it's 12 o'clock noon on during the days, Tuesdays and Wednesdays there, Mike. And
yeah, I think so.
And
it's Tuesdays and it's Thursdays at 5 o'clock. Tuesdays at 12 to 2:30, and then on Thursdays at 5 to about 7:30.
Well, excellent. Well, thank you very much again, Mike, for another produced show. And I'd like to thank our guest, Paul the Butcher Vachon, again. And we will see you next week. Take care, everyone.
Good night, everyone.
For $5 today, you can buy a wealth of things. Gas for your car, rent a movie for the family, a few slices of pizza. $5 still takes you a long ways. But did you know that $5 can buy your child a bag of heroin on the streets? That's right. For only $5, your son or daughter can buy some of the cheapest and purest dope in the country. Be aware of the lies. Be aware of the stealing. Be aware that's all it takes to kill your child. $5. This message was brought to you by Casey's Cause, a group of parents located in southern Chester County out to save your child's life. Come join us today at www.caseyscause.com. And remember, $5 is all it takes. Casey's Cause, www.caseyscause.com.
Looking for that perfect gift for your girlfriend? Then look no further than Teddy Scares. Teddy Scares are available in a variety of styles, sizes, and prices for all your shopping needs. Teddy Scares are a mix of cute and creepy to make a great gift for almost any age. Board up your windows, lock your doors, and log on to TeddyScares.com. And be sure to become our friends at Facebook.com/TeddyScares.
Calling all comic book fans. Do you collect comics? Did you ever collect comics? Do you think your children might like reading comic books? Do you even know they still print real, paper, non-digital comic books? Well, then visit the Pirates of Ontario Street Comics in Philadelphia. We have a massive collection of comic books, action figures, trading cards, and much more. We have one of the largest stocks of back-issue comics in the area. We bag and board every new comic book at no extra charge. Our store is voted the best comic book shop in the 2013 PHL 17 Hot List Contest. Part of the movie Unbreakable is filmed in our store. We are open 7 days a week. Ontario Street Comics is located at 2235 East Ontario Street in the Port Richmond section of Philly. Our phone number is 215-288-7338. Type in the words Ontario Comics Philadelphia to check out our wacky stores page on Facebook.
Are you looking for a mortgage for that new home? Do you want to refinance to a lower rate, obtain cash out, or consolidation? If so, call Anthony Muscarella of Advisors Mortgage Group. Advisors Mortgage Group is a mortgage banker and loan our own money to first lien mortgage loans. We have built a platform for a seamless and stress-free mortgage process, which remains our number one goal for all of our customers. We understand that success cannot be obtained without teamwork and communication, two of our most important strengths. If you're looking to apply for a loan or simply have some questions, please don't hesitate to give Anthony Muscarella a call at 732-749-3333, extension 12, who, by the way, has been recognized by Mortgage Executive Magazine as being one of the top 1% of originators in America. That number again, call Anthony Muscarella at 732-749-3333, extension 12, where we tailor our loans to meet your needs.
Advisors Mortgage Group is an equal housing opportunity lender licensed by the New Jersey Department of Banking and Insurance. Branch NMLS number 173453. Loan officer NMLS number 111400.
Attention business owners, website owners, event promoters, or anyone looking to promote your product. The Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network is the perfect way to spread the word of your business around the world. That's right, you can advertise at our network and be played on all of our shows at rates that are so cheap, it's a no-brainer. For more information, contact Bay Ragney at bayragney@gmail.com. To keep your business driven, stay driven with Totally Driven Entertainment.
Hey everybody, this is Nick Wilkinson from TV Nation and Totally Driven Radio and Entertainment. Sadly, each year, approximately 3.6 million children become victims of child abuse. My latest ebook, Child Abuse, The Ripple Effect, explores the long-lasting effects abuse can have on victims. Explore life after the abuse ends and how we cope with the tragedies of the past. Child Abuse, The Ripple Effect is available on Kindle for only 99 cents. And don't forget to check out my website, actingnotreacting.com, a common sense approach to teens in crisis. Let's work together and make this world a better place. And remember, stay driven.
Are you a fan of Sherlock Holmes? Letters from Holmes offers unique, one-of-a-kind letters from the world-famous detective himself. Handwritten on 8.5-inch by 11-inch aged parchment paper and using smudge-free ink to produce original, high-quality letters that fans will treasure for years to come. Each letter is handcrafted and written from the perspective of Sherlock Holmes, mimicking Holmes's native tongue and embracing many of the famous detective's quirks, quips, insults, and peculiarities. Order a love letter, birthday greeting, personal correspondence, or more only at www.etsy.com/shop/lettersfromholmes.
Are you looking for a mortgage for that new home? Do you want to refinance to a lower rate, obtain cash out, or consolidation? If so, call Anthony Muscarella of Advisors Mortgage Group. Advisors Mortgage Group is a mortgage banker and loan our own money to first lien mortgage loans. We have built a platform for a seamless and stress-free mortgage process, which remains our number one goal for all of our customers. We understand that success cannot be obtained without teamwork and communication, two of our most important strengths. If you're looking to apply for a loan or simply have some questions, please don't hesitate to give Anthony Muscarella a call at 732-749-3333, extension 12, who, by the way, has been recognized by Mortgage Executive Magazine as being one of the top 1% of originators in America. That number again, call Anthony Muscarella at 732-749-3333, extension 12, where we tailor our loans to meet your needs.
Advisors Mortgage Group is an equal housing opportunity lender licensed by the New Jersey Department of Banking and Insurance. Branch NMLS number 173453. Loan officer NMLS number 111400.
For $5 today, you can buy a wealth of things. Gas for your car.
Are you ready to be totally driven? Totally Driven Entertainment Network has a full lineup of shows dedicated to total entertainment. Starting on Mondays, we have the always relevant and often hilarious Hard Talk with Big Daddy and Big Booty Trudy. That's at 6 p.m. And at 11 p.m., go 8 flights up and get your mind right. Tuesdays at noon, Pro Wrestling Now with Mike Ferreira covers professional wrestling news, rumors, and one-of-a-kind interviews with professional wrestling performers and insiders. At 8 p.m., join Smith Hart of the legendary Hart Family Dynasty for the Hart Grapevine as he goes behind the scenes and shares his knowledge of the professional wrestling industry and some truly remarkable special interviews, too. Welcome to Hump Day, Wednesdays, 9:30 a.m., the Coco and Wee Wee Show asks the age-old question, who do you love, who do you shove? And at 8 p.m., the Give No F's Cosplay Variety Hour brings you the best in cosplay, comics, video games, and more. Thursday nights at 5 p.m., Pro Wrestling Now with Mike Ferreira returns to the airwaves to cover professional wrestling news, results, and more. At 8 p.m., Totally Driven Radio, the show that started it all, brings you the best in topical conversations, celebrity interviews, exclusive musical guests, and so much more. Your Friday night would be incomplete without a trip to Uncle Shawnee's Playground. Join Uncle Shawnee at 8 p.m. and prepare to be offended, but, you know, in a good way. At 10 p.m., don't forget the LAW Retro Wrestling Hour, bringing back the golden age of professional wrestling. Saturday mornings at 10 a.m., the Mojo Sports Show starts your weekend off with a healthy dose of sports mojo. Get the latest news, scores, results, and more every Saturday morning. At 9 p.m., Totally Driven Radio rocks. Bay Ragney unleashes his inner beast as he takes you on a heavy metal journey and looks at the music he thinks rocks. That brings us to Sunday morning, the perfect time for a big weenie. At 10 a.m., the Big Weenie Castanini Show goes live around the world. And ending the week at 9 p.m. on Sunday nights, join the TV Nation for your weekly dose of the Nerd Herd and talk all things comics, TV, movies, and pop culture. Remember, get driven, stay driven.